Hello, everyone, and welcome to English Evening. Today is Wednesday, and I'm John.
This is 董宁，大家好，欢迎在周三的夜晚来到中国中央人民广播电台经济之声为您带来的英语之夜节目。Okay, so, John, we talk about agriculture. We mean in a rural area. And farmer, they plant some vegetables or fruits for us who live in a city.
Yeah.
But for now in America, and there's a new kind of a phenomenon. We call it urban agriculture.
Sure.
Which means that people who live in a city, they plant or they garden their own gardens in the balcony or anywhere they could find to plant some vegetables.
Sure, sure. And this is actually really kind of interesting, I think, because a lot of times, you know, especially in the cities, you know, people are pretty disconnected from, you know, where their food comes from. And, you know, there's issues of quality and also, like, you know, pesticides and dangerous chemicals and stuff like that. But now what it's looking like, a lot of people are beginning to grow their own vegetables. And so, like, if you're living, you know, in the countryside, you know, it's actually quite easy to do this for yourself and also to sell. Whereas, like, in the cities, it's difficult because, like, where are you going to grow these vegetables? You know, you don't have the space. There's not very much, you know, soil to plant stuff in, you know, because it's, you know, all steel and concrete. And so what people have found is that they can actually have these gardens, but like on their balcony or maybe on the rooftop of their building or something like that. And so it's a really like interesting way to solve this kind of, you know, food problem, I think.
那以往呢，我们听到菜园或者种菜这样的词呢，我们会想到是在农村。但是现在呢，随着城市里面还有农村人口的生活水平的提高呢，人们越来越重视生活质量。在城市里呢，很多的人呢，在自己的阳台上或者是在屋顶上开辟出来一片绿地来种植蔬菜，我们称之为城市菜园。Yeah, it's not only happening in America, but also in China. For example, one of my friends had a kind of a villa in the countryside.
Oh, cool.
And they plant their own vegetables. You know, for 1 year, they don't have to buy any kind of vegetables in the market.
Sure.
They just eat them themselves. It's enough. So, yeah, it's really, really good. And it's not, you know, the only things for the farmers in the countryside,
sure,
but also
sure.
People who pay much attention about their health problems.
So
they don't want to have any kind of pesticides on their vegetables or fruits. So they plant their own things in the gardens.
Yeah, and actually, like, this kind of stuff is becoming more and more of a trend in the States, at least, where, like kind of like you were saying, people are just kind of a little bit more and more concerned about where their food is coming from, how it's raised and stuff like that. And not just plants and fruits and stuff, but also animals. Like, quite a few people these days are actually starting to grow their own or to raise their own, you know, animals like pigs or sheep or something like that, so that they will raise the animal, take care of it, and then, you know, and then eat it. And it's becoming more and more common, I think, because in the States, at least, people are starting to feel that they are just a little bit too disconnected from their food. And so they want to know where their food is coming from, how it's taken care of, and all that kind of stuff. So, yeah, it's just one of those things where people are just kind of, you know, taking it into their own hands as to where and how their food is being grown.
那其实现在呢，在很多城市，像北京、上海啊，还有成都这样的城市，如果家里面没有条件去种植蔬菜的话，很多人也愿意去乡村去吃这种农家菜。So, that means, I don't know if you've been there before, like if you want to have a different kind of Chinese cuisine, you want to have a like a countryside kinds of dish, that it go to Shunyi or Miyun or any suburb area of outside of Beijing. They can go there. It's very, very special, and it's very green. It's not a bad choice to go to countryside, have this kind of country style cuisine.
Yeah, sure, sure. I mean, it's just one of those things, again, like, it's about, I think, just knowing where your food is coming from. I think that's actually quite important, because, again, like, if you're too disconnected, then I think you don't really appreciate, you know, like, all the work and, you know, all the all the energy that goes into making this kind of food. Whereas, like, if you have your own garden or if you take care of your own livestock, your relationship with the food changes a lot, I think.
Mm.
And so it's always really cool to, like, go into the countryside or like, in the suburbs or something like that and, like, pick your own strawberries or, you know, find your own cucumbers and stuff like that, you know, because it really just kind of gets you in touch with the food, I think.
嗯，那我们刚才提到了美国，提到了中国，那现在在法国呢，很多家庭也兴起了这种菜园的文化。那以前呢，很多人说园艺活都是退了休的人一个人做，那现在呢，这是全家人齐动手。在法国呢，很多拥有廉租房的出租方呢，会开辟一些园子，因为这些园子里有利于良好的邻里关系，可以让不同代人呢重新团结一致。So they think, this kind of gardening is not only a good way for plant vegetables to yourself, mm-hmm. but also can boost the relationship between the generations.
Sure, that makes sense, I think. You know, because it's one of those things, you know, when we talk about the generation gap and all this other stuff, you know, because, you know, the changing technology and changing trends, you know, the older people, it's kind of hard for them to keep up with the younger people, you might say. But at the same time, like, if everyone's growing together, if they, like, they're planting and gardening and stuff like that, then, you know, it's a common experience for them to share, and they can basically, you know, again, they can just kind of share that.
Yeah, in a traditional life in China, for example, like, in a neighborhood, the children could have many, many playmates with the other children. Mm-hmm. But for now, they live in an apartment, and they don't know each other. They even don't know who lives in on the other side of the building. So, you know, sometimes it's kind of a planting or a gardening can help generations like a grandpa or grandma to have a closer relationship with the son's children or your children's children.
Sure. No, and it's always one of those things, I think, you know, any kind of activity that, you know, kind of brings people together to share something, I mean, it's always a good thing.
Mm. Okay, and speaking of plants, you know, onion juice can boost electricity. Can you believe it? Crazy, huh? But according to a new study, it can be possible. 那么最近呢，一项新的研究显示洋葱能够发电。那么专家们说，将洋葱皮捣碎之后呢，榨出的洋葱汁含糖量的极高，很容易产生细菌。而在新系统中呢，这些细菌可以通过洋葱汁产生甲烷，然后呢将其用于发电。
No, it's funny because I just remember like in physics class, like we figured out how to, you know, power a light bulb using a cucumber or a potato, because you can just kind of like stick some things in there, you know, get some wires, and you can do this. And so what they found basically is it's a little bit different. Like they're using bacteria to produce methane gas from the juice, and the gas goes into some fuel cells. And so what it is, they're not necessarily like using the onion per se, rather they're using bacteria to create something else to make more electricity. And it's really interesting because what happened was the question that they wanted to solve was how to get rid of onion waste. And so, because, like, you know, when we have an onion, maybe about 45% of the onion comes off before we actually have a usable onion. And so instead of, you know, taking it to the landfill or the compost, they just decided to actually do something with it, right? And so this is actually a really kind of novel and interesting way to use, you know, like food waste.
So, John, do you think if we had a chance to plant onion on our balcony and we can get some electricity, and we don't have to pay some electricity bill?
Yeah, sure. Maybe the power companies will end up paying us for the electricity that we make.
Yeah, that's what we call green living, huh?
Yeah, no kidding.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so talk about green lifestyle. Mm-hmm. And in America, in Washington, if you don't have a car, if you don't have a bus station around your house, then you can rent a car by hours. Mm-hmm. Yeah, sometimes we don't have to use the rent car for a whole day, just for many hours, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so this kind of a new kind of a renting system is a really, really green kind of a lifestyle. And also in Argentina, in Buenos Aires, the government has also find many ways to how to reduce the cars, because the traffic's really
sure,
a big problem for
sure.
them.
No, it's funny actually, because I was teaching a lesson recently on the environment, and according to the book, like most of the damage to like the ozone layer and to the environment actually comes from cars. Like,
oh yes.
You know, just car exhaust and stuff like that, like all the gas that comes out.
Mm-hmm.
And so like if we can reduce cars or kind of change the way that, you know, cars produce gas and how cars produce energy and stuff like that, then I think we're making some really big steps towards, you know, helping the environment.
Mm-hmm. You know, by this kind of a renting system, which is by hours in
mm-hmm.
Washington, and for another, the traffic has decreased to 10%.
Right? Sure, sure. No, and it's just one of those things. I mean, especially like if you're living like outside of a city, it can be quite difficult if you don't have a car, because, you know, you have to, you know, walk to the grocery store and then like carry all your stuff back from the grocery store. And if you need to buy any big things, well then, you know, you have to like hire a taxi or hire a truck or something like that, which gets expensive. And so this is actually a really good, you know, economic solution to like a problem that many people have, I think. Because like again, like your life in so many ways just becomes much more convenient, you might say, if you have a car. But at the same time, these days people don't necessarily want one, they don't need one, or maybe they just can't afford it. And this is just a good way of kind of giving people this opportunity to have a car just for a little while.
那以前呢，我们提到租车都是按天来租的。现在呢，在美国的华盛顿有按小时来租车的这种系统。那么很多人呢，比方说要外出购物，或者是前往由于距离较远而家里附近呢又没有公交系统这样的地方呢，就会在某网站上呢查询停靠地点，距离自己最近的车辆。那么找到车后呢，用磁卡便可启动。用过之后呢，只需将车停在原来的地方。就可以，这种非常流行的新的租车方式。And there are many ways to live a green and healthy life. So this kind of thing, you know, by hours is a really good thing. And also, it reduces the money you should pay the company. Okay, and for now, let's move on to business. 接下来呢，我们来听听财经资讯。China's crude oil output hits 93.49 million tons in the first half. 上半年中国原油产量达9349万吨。
China's crude oil output hit 93.49 million tons in the first half, a decrease of 1% year on year, according to the country's economic planner recently. China's refineries processed 175.13 million tons of crude oil in the first half, up 1.5% from the same period last year. Gas production reached 42 billion cubic meters, an increase of 7.6% year on year.The growth rate was 9.7 percentage points lower than the same period last year. In the first 5 months, China's petroleum and petrochemical industry reported profits of 94.7 billion yuan, that's about 13.9 billion US dollars, down 35.4% over the same period last year. Oil and gas exploration industry saw profits drop 75.8%, to stand at 49.4 billion yuan in the first half.
Okay, and that was today's business news. Coming up next is Studio Classroom.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to Studio Classroom Worldwide. My name is Steve. We're on our second day of talking about the dangerous but very fascinating shark. The question we're asking is, how do sharks work? More specifically, why are sharks such deadly hunters? Well, one reason is their excellent speed. Another reason is their exceptional ability to sense things around them, even from far away. Sharks have the same five common senses that we humans have, but they also have another sense, which is the ability to detect electrical impulses. What's an impulse? Well, it's our first keyword of the day. Our example sentence reads, when you touch something, your skin sends an impulse to your brain. Next is the adjective murky. After the storm, the water was so murky, we couldn't see the bottom of the lake. Now, please open your magazines and let's get started with the reading on page 54, right-hand column, line 9.
How sharks work. Sharks handle their electric sensing using cells located in the head. Whenever something moves using its muscles, a shark can detect the electrical impulses flowing to those muscles. A shark can electrically see anything that has muscles, even if it is hiding or the water is murky. Sharks even have vibration sensors in their skin. When something moves near the shark, tubes pick up the pressure changes and hairs inside the tubes send signals to the brain. This extra sense allows a shark to turn quickly and attack again.
Hi friends, I'm Chip.
And I'm Rachel. We're so glad you joined us for the second day of our How Stuff Works lesson. This is a fascinating lesson because sharks are absolutely fascinating creatures. And we've been learning about how they work or how they move in the water and what makes them unique as animals.
And yesterday we looked at two of their senses. Their ability to sense other creatures in the water. We looked at their nose, which is a very, our article said, their most important sense. And we also learned that they have amazing hearing ability.
They can hear things from miles away. So they are amazing creatures. Well, let's talk today about their electric sensing, what we're kind of calling their sixth sense. This is amazing. This is something I didn't know about sharks before I read this article. And we see here that sharks handle their electric sensing using cells located in the head.
Well, it sounds like these sharks have specialized or very special cells in their head. So, our article says, whenever something moves using its muscles, a shark can detect the electrical impulses. Now, an impulse is one of our vocabulary words. An impulse is a small, short, quick burst of electricity. And actually, we have impulses going throughout our body whenever we're moving.
And this is a different way that we use this word. Usually, we use it in the word impulsive, or you do something on impulse. There's some similarity there, though, because if you are very impulsive, you do something very quickly, and you don't think about it too much. So there's a bit of a connection.
Absolutely. There's definitely a connection there. And it's amazing. Actually, our hearts that are beating right now, believe it or not, they have electric impulses keeping the heart muscle beating like it should.
Well, what's also is fascinating is that the sharks can detect these electrical impulses flowing to those muscles. And somehow, they can electrically see anything that has muscles, even if it is hiding or the water is murky. Now, we have the word see in quotation marks there because they're not actually looking at this. They are sensing it, right?
That's right. They're not seeing it with their eyes. They are seeing it with the cells in their head, their electric sensing cells.
Because maybe this thing with muscles is quite far away, and so they're just sensing it. They know that it's there. This is so fascinating. Now, they can even see anything with muscles if the water is murky. Now, murky is one of our our word bank words. And Chip, what does it mean if water is murky?
Well, if water is murky, that means that it's not clear. Maybe it's a little cloudy. Maybe the wind or the waves have mixed up the water and mixed up dirt and dust in the water so that it's cloudy and you can't see through the water very easily.
Okay, so we can move on now to our next paragraph and learn some more interesting facts about sharks. Here we learn that sharks even have vibration sensors in their skin. Let's stop for a minute on the word vibration. If you've ever sat in one of those massage chairs and it's vibrated, then it's moved back and forth against your arms or your legs or your back, and you feel like you're vibrating. This word has many uses, doesn't it?
It sure does. Another example of vibrations are whenever I'm standing in front of a big music speaker and it's playing very, very loud music, I can feel the vibration on my hair and on my skin and in my clothes. I can feel the air vibrating. I can feel the vibrations in the air. And this is similar to the experience of a shark feeling vibrations in the water.
True. Sharks have all of these senses that allow them to pick up on even these small movements, the small vibrations. And what we see here is that when something moves near the shark, tubes pick up the pressure changes and hairs inside the tubes send signals to the brain. Wow.
So we have a shark with apparently very small tubes. These tubes are filled with hairs, and these hairs sense changes, pressure changes, vibration happening in the water, and it sends that signal to the shark's brain. So they can sense very small creatures moving and living in the water around them.
And this extra sense allows a shark to turn quickly and attack again, which means that probably most other fish don't get away too easily because the sharks are so attuned to what's going on around them. They're using all of their senses, including that electrical sense.
That's right. I mean, if you are a creature in the water, you've got problems if there's a shark near you.
Welcome back from the break, everybody. Sharks can sense electrical impulses, and as we learned before the break, they have yet another non-human ability to sense vibrations and slight changes in water pressure. Wow. Friendly or not, you have to admit, sharks are fascinating creatures. Okay, the last two words of the day are the noun prey, as in snakes hunt prey such as mice and small birds, and the adjective definite. There is a definite relationship between how much people exercise and their health. Now, let's wrap up the lesson. We're now on the top left side of page 55.
How sharks work. When you put all these different senses together, it makes the shark a nearly ideal hunter. A shark can detect prey from miles away and then use eyes, electrosensing, and movement sensing to home in. Strangely, sharks do not seem to use these senses to home in on people. The very low number of shark attacks tells us that sharks don't hunt human prey on a regular basis. On the other hand, people love to hunt sharks. Millions and millions of sharks die every year. Without protection, extinction is a definite possibility.
Welcome back. We've been talking about the sensory package on a shark. We've already talked about the shark's fins, the shark's tail, the shark's nose, ears, electric sensing, and vibration sensors. And when you put all of these different senses together, it makes the shark a nearly ideal hunter.
A nearly ideal hunter. If something is ideal, it's perfect. And this means it's a nearly perfect hunter. And a hunter, of course, is something or someone or an animal that hunts or goes after other animals. So that's why the sharks can be so deadly. That's why many other fish and sometimes even humans don't stand a chance when the sharks come around.
Right. As the shark is a nearly ideal hunter, it's a hunter because it hunts animals that we would call prey. A predator hunts prey. So a predator is an animal that eats other animals for food, and prey are the animals that a predator eats.
That's a great example, Chip, because I do think of a shark as a predator. And so it is hunting its prey, P-R-E-Y, and it can actually detect this prey from miles away. Now let that sink in for a minute. Miles away. We're not talking about prey that's right next to the shark swimming around it. We're talking about it senses it miles away.
That is absolutely amazing. I guess you have the shark's nose, the shark's ears, the electric sensors. I guess I can understand how this is possible for a shark to detect prey miles away.
Wow. Well, after it senses the prey or detects it, then the shark uses its eyes, electrosensing, and movement sensing to home in. So now let's back up a bit. We've seen this electric sense before. They have these electric senses, but now we're using this word electrosensing, and we've put it all together in one word.
Yeah, it's a combination of electric and sensing. So electrosensing is the way that we would refer to this.
So it kind of describes this particular talent or skill that the sharks have. They can use electrosensing and movement sensing, which means they just sense. They're able to see the movement around them, and then they home in on their prey. Now, let's look at this phrase for a minute, because I see the word home there, like our house, our home, but what does it mean to home in?
Well, we're not talking about home like we normally think about it, but to home in on something means to use your senses to move closer and closer to your goal. So the goal of a shark is its prey, and it's using its sensing, or it's using its sensors to get closer and closer, to home in on its prey.
So it can attack and have a nice meal. Now, I have to say, this last paragraph in our article is very comforting to me. I'm so glad to see that, strangely, or encouragingly, sharks do not seem to use these senses to home in on people. This was my question all along. Are we in the same kind of trouble if we're miles away and they can sense us sitting on the beach? Or, you know, but that's not the case, is it?
Well, the sharks definitely know when you're in the water. So it's not an issue of whether or not they can sense us. It's a matter of, do they want to eat us? And the statistics, research says that they really don't seem to hunt humans very often.
Right. They're not kind of pursuing us maybe in the same way they'd pursue other fish in the ocean. We see here that the very low number of shark attacks tells us that sharks don't hunt human prey on a regular basis. So we're not maybe their first choice of meat.
That's right. Now, in the movies, it's a little different. I think a good shark movie, I think humans are pretty normal prey for sharks in the movies. But in real life, this is not true.
Everyone knows and has heard that sharks are not friendly. But we don't often hear the reasons why sharks are so fascinating. So hopefully in these past 2 days, we've learned something new about these intriguing animals. Hope you have a fascinating day. Bye bye, everybody.
本节目由吉林省空中英语教室杂志社提供，也可登录相关网站收听当日广播教学节目。本节目配套杂志播讲 MP3 在全国各大书店有售，并可在当地邮局订阅。
Okay, and that was Studio Classroom, which means that we are at the end of this Wednesday edition of English Evening. But as always, we do appreciate you guys listening, and listen to us again tomorrow.
Mm-hmm. Hope to see you tomorrow. Bye bye.
听众朋友，英语之夜节目的播出时间是每晚22:30到23:00，欢迎收听。
北京时间22:59，中央人民广播电台经济之声，让你永远领先一分钟。
Coffee 经济学，
欢迎来到 Coffee 经济学。
今日查点，杠杆企业 Leverage Organization。 在物理学当中，杠杆能用很小的力量撬动很重的物体。在经济学当中，负债就是企业的杠杆。资本结构当中，有负债的企业被称作杠杆企业。但负债经营是一把双刃剑，既能使企业迅速筹集资金，降低经营成本，减少税负支出，也有可能使企业陷入到债务危机。瑞士